Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 28, 2020. A taste for basic needs. Question: the needs of the lowest level of our desires do not disappear, they are preserved at all levels. Therefore, even if I am at the top of the pyramid today, will I always have animalistic needs? Answer: the whole set of them. Each of us contains the entire pyramid of desires. Moreover, the higher we rise in our values, the stronger our connection with the lowest levels becomes. Therefore, in Kabbalah it is said that the higher a person rises, the stronger his craving for basic needs become: food, sex, family. Question: that is, it is not that a person begins to neglect them, but on the contrary, he begins to feel a taste for them, a taste for respect, for money, etc.? Answer: for everything. Question: is such a struggle constantly taking place in him? Answer: this is what his growth is about. Question: it means that he does not become indifferent to this whole world, money, and everything else? Answer: never and in no way. It is only in books they write that spiritual people are supposedly all God's dandelions. On the contrary, as their spiritual desires grow, so do their bodily, egoistic, earthly desires. From CAB TV's Management Skills, June 25, 2020. When hearts sing. Comment: they say that the most affordable cure for stress when things are bad is singing. Even better to sing in a choir. Italians and Spaniards go out on their balconies and sing. Scientists say that when we sing, a large part of our brain is activated. The brain has a singing network of neurons that is distributed quite widely. This is a kind of aerobics, in which the body produces endorphins, hormones of joy. This reduces stress levels and improves mood. My response: obviously. Question: when I sing, is it as if I get emotionally and sensually out of myself and work for someone else? Answer: for others, for everybody. Question: does it mean that the song has a deep, even spiritual meaning? Answer: they sing together. If the song is choral, then of course, this is a completely different effect. The choir connects everybody together into one common whole. If at the same time they chant something like psalms, then there is a very strong impact. We praise our commonality, our unity, and we want to appeal from within ourselves, from our common whole, to the upper force of nature, to the Creator, in order to contact Him. We are to Him, and He is to us. In Italy, people tried to do this, and as a result, they have almost nothing. Comment: first, we need to sort out ourselves in Israel. My response: we will not be able to sort out ourselves. Humanity will suffer, but we will suffer more. Question: what if we would start singing? Answer: if Israel starts singing together, in chorus, all of humanity will join, and it will really be an appeal of all of humanity to the upper force. We will rise to the spiritual level, find ourselves in perfection, in health, in eternity. Question: when you say, Israel will sing in chorus, what do you imply by that? What is Israel? Who is this? Answer: they are just the people of Israel. All those who associate with us, and not necessarily of Jewish origin. If we sing, the whole world will immediately be cured, and absolutely and immediately from all the sicknesses, from all the problems, internal and external ones, and mainly psychological ones. Question: you say, we will sing. What will we sing? Answer: the heart sings. It sings that I want to unite with everyone and that together with everyone we turn to the Creator. Only with one thing, to help us, be together with each other and with Him. Question: turning to the Creator, what do I say? What do I sing to Him with my heart? Answer: to feel only the connection between me, humanity, and the Creator, nothing more. Question: Do I feel that this is love, that this is bestowal? Answer, of course, this is love, this is bestowal, and this is like the feeling of a fetus in the mother's womb. Question, in other words, the fetus is singing a blessing for its mother? Answer, yes, of course. The best state. There is nothing better. From CAB TV's The News with Michael Lateman, July 6, 2020. Managing Stress, Part 9. Question, why are women more resistant to stress than men? Answer, it is physiological. They should give birth, raise children, and take care of their families. Therefore, they have greater resistance to everything. Question, can we say that egoists are more susceptible to stress? Answer, naturally. The greater the egoistic desire, the more one depends on all kinds of external conditions. Question, are there any methods to fully control our feelings and emotions? Answer, yes. If a person completely lets go of his egoism, then there is practically nothing that can influence him from the outside. Question, is stress contagious? Answer, of course. It is transmitted. It literally infects entire regions. Question, it is said that young people are more susceptible to stress than older people. Do you agree? Answer, yes. They have an unstable system. They transmit this state to each other. Question, to make it easier to overcome life's difficulties, psychologists advise people to compare themselves with people who are worse off than they are. Do you consider this an effective action? Answer, no. This is wrong, opposed to human nature, and vulgar. I have to think that someone else is worse off and that's why I'm better off. It is lowly to be attuned to life as such. Question, strong psychological and physical shocks are genetically transmitted to descendants and they become more resistant to stress. Do you agree with this statement? Answer, yes. Any disease makes us healthier. Question, can climate change increase rates of depression and anxiety? Answer, naturally. We are inside a sphere that is generally called nature, and it affects us, with all its factors. Question, one reaction to long-term stress is to escape into an illusory world. Many go somewhere to a remote village. Do you think this is effective? Answer, a person is ready to do anything to get rid of internal and external pressures. So there's no getting away from it. Question, there are statistics on how the most successful people on Earth cope with stress. For example, Bill Gates reads before going to bed. Apple CEO Tim Cook tries to ignore the words of cynics. Businessman Elon Musk looks his fear in the face. Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, laughs a lot. Chief Operating Officer of Facebook Sheryl Sandberg turns off her phone at night. How do you deal with stress? Answer, I do not believe a word they say. All of this is so shallow that I do not know for whom it might work. What do? I study the wisdom of Kabbalah and find comfort in it. In it I find the solution to all questions, and therefore, it is the most important for me. From CAB TV's Management Skills, June 25, 2020. New Life 1272. How to Prevent Civil War.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lateman. Hello, Dr. Lateman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Todd. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about how to prevent a war between brothers. We're living in stormy times here in Israel, and we'd like to understand how to avoid a catastrophe and maybe get some peace and quiet. Tal, please. Undoubtedly, there's lots of tension, pressure. In the first wave of the corona, there was some kind of fraternity, brotherhood, something. But now, the more we advance and the corona's not letting go, we see that the public's becoming more stormy. There are more and more frictions, and there is an escalation in public debate. Even the president said that there is a danger of political murder and so on. There is a real fear of physical violence and war between different groups with different views in the public. And especially we see the two political groups fighting each other, but there are also other groups that can't agree on anything. If I came from a more leftist point of world view, I see that we can't listen to any other opinion, even if the news will present something that is opposed to my worldview, to my group. I don't see it. I don't hear it. I listen only to what I think is correct and true. And these two groups, as if can't understand each other, there's a complete rift between these two groups, and things are only getting worse, escalating. So, from this point, how do we come to something better? And the question is, first of all, why does the corona bring us to such an escalation in the relations between us? Dr. Layton, it's not simple, and it's not a virus like we think about it from the medical or biological point of view. But the force that is working on us, and first and foremost, is working on us and activating our ego. And the ego is the center of our life. The inner basic central fundamental force of man and society and in general the entire universe. And when the egoistic force grows in the still vegetative animate and especially in people, then as a result we see problems, collisions, outbursts on all levels. And it's no wonder that today the world seems so bad. And for me, it's not a matter of a biological virus. For me, it's a matter of, I'd say, a spiritual virus. That it's a matter of our worldview, our attitude toward ourselves, towards others. All this is being upgraded by the growing evil force, and in nature there is a special program that this is how it's activating itself, and we have to acknowledge the evil of our development. So much so that we will also acknowledge what the remedy for it is, that we will be able to deal, that we will be able to derive the force of good from nature. But in the meantime, I see the entire process as a correct process. And in my eyes, it is a preferable process, preferable. And this is called the recognition of evil, the revelation of evil, and the revelation of our egoistic nature, that we don't want to think about any kind of connection or closeness to anyone else, that I'm the only one who I accept and no one else. This is the first stage of the development of man. First of all, to develop the evil, to reveal it, and afterwards, distance yourself from evil and do good. These are processes that we have to go through. So if I understand correctly, We are at a stage of the recognition of evil, and I see that every group thinks that the evil is that the other group is evil. They're the only ones that are harming the connection. We're the good guys. We want in favor of the country and so on. From this state where we think that the other person has to change, how can we reach a state that is positive, Dr. Leitman? Were we to talk about other countries and nations around the world, then you could say that, yeah, that's the way. But we, who came here to build and be built, that we came to the land of Israel, we already came opposed, and everyone remembers that period of collisions between the different parts of society. And there's nothing that we can do. We only have to understand where it comes from and to explain to everyone. It all depends on education. And if we over time studied this, throughout all of these years we only learned about it as history and not something that's necessary for us today, and it's not that we have to do something about it, then we came to a state where the younger generation, they're simply pouring into the streets, only seeing their enemies, willing to kill them, feeling hate for them. Not like toward members of his own nation, but as toward the greatest enemies. And therefore, everything depends on education. Unfortunately, we missed this period, and we did not advance in that correctly. We see what's going on. And now we're not aware that our generation is in a bad situation. We're saying, no, the children are good. What do you want? Everyone has to have freedom. There should be pluralism. Our approach today is incorrect, too. That our teacher, as if giving themselves freedom, that this is how we have to educate. If you hate, you hate. You love, you love. I can't even talk about them. So when I look at the results of this education, how terrible it seems to me. You talked about hate, that the younger generation, when they go and they take to the streets and so on, what is the root of this hate? Is it a regular psychological hate that you're part of this group, I'm part of that group, that's it? That's something that's well known, that a person identifies with his own group and he enjoys hating the other group. Is this the source of the hate that we're revealing? Dr. Leitman, it has nothing to do with psychology. It has nothing to do with psychology whatsoever. We are in a special creation, special world. We're special creatures. That at our foundation is the ego. And then everything that I have in my ego, I love, and something that is not a part of it, even a bit, I hate. And nothing can help in this regard. I can't change myself. Therefore, we have no choice. Unless we go through the right, correct education, this hate will stay with us, and we won't be able to do anything, deal with life. Owen, I want to talk about the probability of a war between brothers. What if we will not be able to mend the differences, the rift between the extreme right, the extreme left, these, those? Can there be a war between brothers? Dr. Lightman, yeah? So much so that we'll practically destroy each other, and a small quantity of people will remain in order for us to be able to realize the thought of creation, the purpose of creation. But we can come to that. There were already such examples in history. Tal, and why does every such group see the other group as a real danger to their life? Dr. Lightman, because our ego is very great compared with other nations, and there, even if there is some kind of rejection, but it's not up to the point of hate. Even in the United States, we see that when there are such things, then there too, it's not ideological, but it's about black and white. Here it's something else. Here it's ideological. Here in the same family, there could be such that hate each other, like there's no one in the world that you hate more. Tal, what makes us split, Dr. Lake? Because we're a developed nation, and therefore we can't stand anyone who's against my own opinion. All over the world we see that the political rift, the ideologies, they really take families apart. Dr. Lightman, yeah, in our times that exists there too. So what is the root of this hate that is revealed? Dr. Lightman, our ego? Our entire world, all in all, stems from the egoistic desire of self-love. This is the only thing that rules, controls, directs a person to do all that he does, and the more developed, have a greater force, egoistic force. And as it says, anyone greater than his friends, than his friend, his egoistic force is greater. And therefore, it's no wonder that we as an ancient developed nation have a more egoistic desire than other nations, and therefore we're truly on the verge of mutual annihilation. Oh, and so the situation is dangerous, even more dangerous than we thought. And now I want to advance in the direction of how can we connect between the groups? Is it possible to settle, to find a way to bring, to make peace between these two ideologies in some way, Dr. Lightman? It's a serious process that you can come to only through education. Oh, and what are the stages of this process, Dr. Lightman? First of all, we have to explain where does the state that we exist in come from, the current state. What is the evil inclination? What is the evil force, our ego? Why are we so cruel that we're not willing even to listen to the other? Look what you have on television. The nation is educated by what they see. No one lets the other talk. Someone starts talking, the other cuts him off. That's how it is all the time. I don't know. The once or twice that I came to these talks, I started talking. When someone else starts talking, I stopped. They look at me, why do you stop? How can I talk if someone else is talking? And they couldn't even understand how to continue, because everyone together has to talk. If everyone together has to talk, then no one hears the other. Then what did I come for? What did I come for? I can listen to myself at home too. Tal, the process that we have to go into is the style, our ability to listen to each other. Dr. Lightman, we have to learn. It's an entire system. An entire system of how do we communicate. Suppose I'm a person who has leftist views and I'm 100% that I'm right. I love my country, I want its benefit, and the other side are dangerous. How can I do something that you call head toward unity? Or I'm sure that I'm right, Owen. And suppose I have right-wing views. I think the same, only from the opposite point, and we're sitting at the same table on both of its sides, and each of us is 100% that his opinion is true and correct for the future of the country, and because the other has an opposite opinion, he's actually the danger, because we live in the same country. If we'd have two countries, great, you can do what you want. But because we have one country, we can do only one thing, and her opinion destroys everything, and she thinks that mine does. How do we start communicating? Dr. Lightman, you have nothing to talk about? Nothing. To the contrary. It's better for you to simply shut up, because then each of you will know that the other is opposed to me, and then what's left to do is only to kill them. So it's better not to talk. It's better to talk when the sides understand, are ready, know what we have to come to and in what way, and then they can enter some kind, go into some kind of connection. What they do on TV, on the talk shows, or in parliament, it's all a circus. In order to get rating, in order for people to watch, and to educate people in the worst possible way. Owen, okay, we understand that things aren't working. What can you offer us that can lead us to a better place and prevent a war between brothers? Dr. Lee, education. Owen, what are the stages? You're not talking about kindergartens and schools, Dr. Lightman. There too? There too, because this is where we are. That you have reached a state that you can't talk to each other, but you only want to kill each other. You came from the different educational institutions. What did they teach you there? What did the educational institutions teach you? To kill each other, to want to kill each other. We weren't given the preparation, Dr. Lightman. You were given hate toward each other. Spell it out. We can't blur the matter. It's forbidden. Owen, I don't remember that I was taught to hate anyone if his opinions are opposed to mine. There is room for his opinions, for my opinions, there's democracy. I was brought up to advance the agenda that I think is correct. Tal was taught to do the same. We weren't taught to hate, Dr. Lightman. So the fact that you think that this was correct education, that's the mistake. Owen, so what do we have to add? Let's put aside what happened. Dr. Lightman, in my opinion, what we have to add is education. Education, not what you had. You didn't have education. That's not called education. That you go out and you can hate others. Education, first and foremost, has to be to love others. Write this down, please. Very good. That correct education means to love others, despite the fact that they have different views. Maybe they speak differently. First and foremost, I love the other person. That's called love covers all crimes. And after I relate to others that way, I can start thinking, what is our purpose in life? What are we living for? How can I relate to a person that is a part of my nation, that is like a brother with someone's someone close? Am I allowed to hate him? I have to get the opposite education. You don't tell that, you weren't told that you have to love the other. But yeah, there's pluralism, different opinions. And what happens? All of these different opinions, opposing opinions, when they take to the streets, it really becomes dangerous. We see even in families where we're supposed to love, opposing opinions generate hate. So what can we do? It's not through learning, it's through education. Education has to build a human being. It's not just the acquisition of knowledge to teach a person, but you have to sculpture that person to really build him. And therefore, this is very meticulous work, and we have to learn how to do this. We have to prepare the correct educators. Olin, what is there to love about someone who thinks the opposite to what I think? His way of thinking causes harm, in my opinion, to myself and to my children and to everyone. What can I love him for? He's the source of evil. Dr. Leitman, if you learn that you come from one source, and that this source is one of love, and that by this upper source that exists in nature, that it on purpose puts you in these kinds of disputes for you to be able to rise above the hate, above different arguments, in order to rise to a higher level than simply fighting on the street and all this nonsense. You will understand that you have an opportunity to be above people in this world, being above who we are, but to really exist on a higher level. Oh, and this higher level, so it's like superior being, it's a more advanced social creature, Dr. Leitman. Yeah, it's the gathering of people, a collection, a gathering of people that are internally connected, that want to be connected this way, and by doing so to reach the upper force of nature. Owen, the people that put together this entity, they all have the same opinion. Dr. Leitman, no way, the complete opposite. Only each of them concedes his own personal opinions in order to reach connection, in order to reach a hug, so that in this kind of connection, in this unity between opposing states, they will feel the connection of the separation, in the separation, and will be able to identify with the upper force in nature. Owen, suppose here in Israel, people create this kind of connection, which you called a higher being. What will things be like then? People will be more right-wing, left-wing, middle. How will they take practical decisions? Dr. Leitman, love covers for all crimes. It's forbidden for them to take any decision make any law unless they reach a happy middle. Oh, and what happy middle? I have an extreme opinion, and she does too. Dr. Leitman, until you raise yourself above all of these opinions and connect there, it's forbidden for you to decide on anything. Otherwise, you decide according to what? To the majority. So there's what? There's pluralism here, there's socialism, communism, who knows what? Or by the power of the fist, like we see sometimes people fighting over these things. Or what? Oh, and I'm not familiar with a better method than the majority, Dr. Leitman, but the majority won't help. According to the majority, what happens is that people take to the streets and you have no majority. You see what's going on. You take to the streets in order to show everyone who's stronger. By the power of fist. How could it be that in the 21st century that people take to the streets like they did thousands of years ago, suppose, wanting to convince each other forcefully by burning whatever, shops, and so on, trying to convince each other by violence, breaking everything. How could it be that by this we as if decide who's wrong, who's right? Please explain. Oh, and I have no explanation. It's really painful. Dr. Leitman, so we're living in a state where I have no idea whether in the Stone Age they reached these kinds of decisions. There you had the elderly who were accepted by the entire tribe, suppose. And the elderly used to say, we have to do this and that. Today you have no elderly. Today everyone disregards all the elderly, giving them 1,000 shekels a month in order for them to shut up. And we, the younger generation, take to the streets, breaking showcases, burning stores here, there. And then we show everyone that we're right. Right. After we burn and do, pushing the elderly aside, and then what follows is that we're right.
Okay.
Tal, maybe from this low point we'll be able to advance to a better state. Dr. Leitman, for sure, with the help of education. Oh, and our time's up, but again, can you repeat, what is the central qualitative additional thing that each of us has to take? What do we have to add? Dr. Leitman, to add that we have to rise above each above his own personal truth, and to reach a state where love covers all crimes. That we reach the upper force. It's not that you're right or I'm right. None of us is right. The truth is above us both. Oh, and thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
My article in Newsmax, America's Slow Death by Implosion. Where is America going? It seems like there is not a corner in this vast country that isn't experiencing some sort of a crisis, and often more than one at the same time. On the West Coast, the second and third largest fires in California history are burning at the same time, along with more than 500 other fires. The blazes started after California was hit by 11,000 lightning strikes in just 3 days. Incidentally, The 10 biggest fires in California history have all burned in the last 17 years, which tells you something about the changing climate. But California is not only burning. The smoke-filled air makes it even more uncomfortable, and often risky, to wear face masks to protect from COVID-19, which is raging all over the US and has so far infected nearly 6 million people and killed more than 180,000. But a lot more is happening in America right now, or was happening until very recently, depending on when you are reading this column. In Oregon, anarchists have taken over downtown Portland and have terrorized residents, looted stores, disrupted life and attempted to set ablaze the federal courthouse in the city. In the Gulf of Mexico, Louisiana and neighboring states are being hit by tropical storms, one of which is a hurricane, in a span of 2 days. In Chicago, the magnificent Mile High-end shopping street has been looted and its shops destroyed by anarchists, in addition to an extreme wave of gun violence. Many wealthy Chicagoans are trying to move out of the city but cannot find buyers for their downtown apartments. Just north of Chicago, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, a white officer's shooting of an unarmed black man behind his back in front of his children reignited the protests against police brutality. In New York City, gun violence has spiked this year and so far, more than 1,100 people have been slain by gunfire since the beginning of the year in New York City alone. And while all this is going on, hunger is spreading all over the US according to Forbes. At minimum, the number of households that lack stable food supply has doubled, and possibly tripled, since April 2018, making current rates of food insecurity nearly 30% higher than at any point since data collection began by a simple calculation. This means that roughly 100 million people in the US alone often go hungry. But these numbers aren't the worst of the blow. According to Brookings Institution, as of April this year, 34% of households with children under 18 suffered from lack of food, and 41% of households with children under 12 suffered from the same. In simple words, many millions of children are currently hungry in what was supposed to be the land of unlimited possibilities. What is going on here? Is it a coincidence that the worst of nature and the worst of human nature seem to be converging in one place? It is not at all a coincidence. There are forces at play here that impact every level of our lives, physical, emotional, and social. On the physical level, they manifest in heating and cooling, pulling and pushing, spreading and converging. On the emotional level, they manifest in love and hate, alienation and affection, apathy and sympathy. On the social level, they form cohesion and disintegration, war and peace, tolerance and extremism. When one force becomes more dominant than the other, it pulls toward it the other force, which balances it and restores the system's equilibrium. As the system shifts from imbalance to balance, the ripples impact all levels of nature. The more abrupt and forceful the restoration of balance, the sharper its impact on all levels of existence. The United States of America has been for many years the center of humanity's ego-based civilization. So when the system begins to balance itself, its impact will be felt at the heart of it more than anywhere else. There is no lack of food in America, but there is hunger everywhere. There is no lack of funds, but there is extreme poverty. There could be great education for everyone, but it is reserved for those who can afford it. Nowhere does the ego reign so supreme as it does as in the US, so when nature begins to enforce balance, it hurts the most in America. The process of rooting from the ego-based culture has already begun and will only accelerate. There is no turning back. And America, which was on top while the ego reigned high, will be at the bottom when it falls. Nevertheless, not all is lost for America, since it still depends on itself. If Americans are brave enough to challenge their own beliefs and the system they grew up in, and go along with nature's push to balance receiving with giving, individuality with mutuality, egoism with altruism, then once again they will come out on top. If they refuse, nature will show them who's boss. The new era does not refute the American dream. It is against realizing it at the expense of others. The new era promises abundance, but on condition that everyone enjoys it. If, in the future, we will advocate tyranny, bullying and superiority, nature will not tolerate it. The era of balance is not one of scarcity, it is one of abundance for everyone, but first and foremost, abundance of caring for one another equally, above all differences. This is the only route America can take if it wants to save itself from misery. My new article on LinkedIn: When Voters Are the Staircase to the Throne. A few hours after the results come in, the winner of the 2020 presidential election will come on stage, thank his supporters, perhaps thank his rival for a tough race, and promise that he will be everyone's president, not just of those who voted for him. But when a country is divided as deeply as America has become today, I'm not sure any president can patch it up. To make America one again, you need more than words, you need a common goal. When people of differing views share a common goal, their different viewpoints contribute to its attainment, since they can cover more angles, look at things from different perspectives, and reflect problems that the other side did not think of before they materialize. But when each party sees the country as its own possession and wants to exploit it to promote its own interests, you're bound to deepen the chasm and exacerbate the anger. It seems that everyone has forgotten that unity is not built out of similar opinions, but out of different views that unite around a common goal through mutual concessions. Currently, America is en route to mayhem. There is utter mistrust between Democrats and Republicans, conservatives and progressives, and blacks and whites. Generally, America has become a country where every decision you make puts you in agreement with half the country and at odds with the other half, even if you don't want to be at odds with anyone. It seems as though there is no middle anymore, only extremes. 4 years ago, there was still a faint veneer of respect between the two parties. Today, no one even bothers to conceal the odium. I am all for frankness. But when you take pride in your derision of another and do not intend to mend it, you are sowing wind, and you will reap the storm. It seems that everyone has forgotten that unity is not built out of similar opinions, but out of different views that unite around a common goal through mutual concessions. If the benefit of the United States were the goal of both parties when they come to present their cases to the public, it would have been a very different election campaign, and the whole country would be in a very different situation than it is in today. But when power is the goal and the voters are the staircase to the throne, politicians will not miss a step as they trample their way to the top. My new article on LinkedIn: Virtual High Holidays and What They Mean. Now that COVID-19 has imposed social distancing on us, many establishments that rely on physical attendance have a problem. Among them are shuls. According to a story on Jewish Telegraphic Agency, JTA, the pandemic's first high holiday season has synagogues wondering, will people pay dues? This is a very good question, and it remains to see how Jewish establishments such as synagogues and JCCs will cope with the absence of income from participants who come to attend services and activities. If only those who can afford a hefty entry fees may pray to God inside the shul, and if only those who pray by our prayer book are allowed to join the service, and the rest are told to find their own kind, then we are an example of Sinat Hinam, unfounded hatred, the very cause of our exile and dispersion. If we hate our brethren, we do not deserve to congregate. But to me, the more interesting point is the message behind the prohibition to congregate. I think that any Jew who believes in God should ask, what is God trying to tell us, by not letting us congregate on the holiest day of the year? When have Jews not been able to congregate on Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement? Probably only during the Holocaust and under totalitarian or anti-Semitic regimes. Does he not want our prayers? How can we atone for our sins if we can't congregate for the Yom Kippur services? In my view, there is indeed a message here. We are unworthy of servicing God because we are untrue to the fundamental tenet of our Torah, love your neighbor as yourself. If only those who can afford the hefty entry fees may pray to God inside the shul, and if only those who pray by our prayer book are allowed to join the service, and the rest are told to find their own kind, then we are an example of sinat hinam, unfounded hatred, the very cause of our exile and dispersion. If we hate our brethren, we do not deserve to congregate. I think that this year is very special. This year, we truly have an opportunity to contemplate our Jewishness, to reflect on what it means to be a Jew, on why we were told to be a light unto nations and what this means. And I think we should start from the basics, from unity and mutual responsibility. Before we learn to recite from the prayer book, let's learn to pray for one another, let's be a role model of unity rather than an example of division. Today is a time of tectonic changes. Judaism, too, will have to change. Unless we return to our core values of love of others and mutual responsibility, Judaism as we know it will vanish. The importance of the environment in human development. Comment: American psychologist Abraham Maslow, author of The Well-Known Hierarchy of Human Needs, asserted that a teacher or culture does not create a person or instill the ability to love or be loved, to philosophize, create symbols, or create. But they do provide an opportunity, and helps, what exists in the embryo to become real and actual. Answer: indeed. The acceleration of personality development depends on the environment. The importance of the environment is very great because if we choose the right environment and connect with it, this will radically change our destiny. Through communication with the environment, we determine the methods and speed of passage of various states. Question: signs of personal growth, as psychologists write, are an increase in the ability to analyze, see the connections of events and phenomena, and understand other people. This is inner freedom and independence, a manifestation of responsibility. How else can you identify these signs? Answer: signs of personal growth are manifested in a person as he or she realizes the importance of the environment. This is most important. In addition to what we have and develop in a natural way, the only parameter that we can change by ourselves is the environment. Question: consciousness of responsibility for one's life is one of the main signs of personal growth. When should a person say that only he or she is responsible for what is happening to him or her, and when to transfer his or her responsibility to nature, to higher forces? Answer: being completely within a certain environment and giving yourself to it, we begin to feel through this connection what we receive through our efforts with respect to the environment, and what the environment gives us, without our efforts. This is how we begin to share the impact on ourselves. From CabTV's Management Skills, June 25, 2020. Where is the spark of the soul? Question: where in the body is the spark of the soul? How can I feel that it is really inside me? Answer: the spark is not in a person's body. There is no such place in the body that you can cut and remove from it. It is a spiritual force that is not in the corporeal body. Even if your body ceases to exist, the spark will still remain and will acquire a new corporeal body. It is the spiritual gene that exists permanently and is passed on from one life to the next. The only thing that changes is its corporeal carrier. From CabTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, September 16, 2018.